And it's like, well, when people say that to me, like, well, what about the password manager getting breached? It's like, well, that fatalist attitude is unhelpful. First of all, the low-hanging fruit is not the password manager getting hacked. The low-hanging fruit is the fact that you're using password as a password.
Welcome to Elements of Styles, the business podcast that trades in scarce thinking for community, conversation, and ideas in abundance. Each week, I, Mark Styles, sit with professionals and entrepreneurs, both local and global, and learn how they each add value to their communities, their partners, and their teams. Please enjoy. Hey, folks, welcome back to Elements of Styles. Today, I'm grateful to have a friend, a person I've known for a few years. He's a security expert and private investigator with over 30 years' experience. He's the number one best-selling Amazon.com author of 5 books and the architect of CSI Protection Certification, a cyber social identity and personal protection security awareness training program. This is going to be exciting. He's a frequent speaker and media commentator and CEO of Safer.me. And head trainer at ProtectNowLLC.com, which I encourage you all to check out, ProtectNowLLC.com. He's been featured on CNN, Fox News, CNBC, MSNBC, ABC World News Tonight, NBC Nightline, CBS Early Show, Today Show, Good Morning America, and the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, Fortune, Forbes, Entrepreneur, and many more. His mission is to inform, educate, and empower people so that they can protect themselves and their loved ones from violence and crime in their everyday lives, both in their physical and virtual interactions. Folks, without further ado, please meet Rob Siciliano. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you, sir. 2 things right off.
Yes, sir.
Number one, it's not a few years. It's actually 20 plus.
Wow. Years.
Yeah, 20 plus years. For more FYI, Mark actually helped me close on the house that I'm living in today, which was 20 plus years ago. And number two, one thing you didn't mention in my media, which I really do need to shorten that, is I've also been on the Howard Stern show.
Really?
Yeah, twice.
Tell me about that. Tell
I
us.
Cannot,
tell the listener.
I cannot. And it's not fit for publication.
Really?
Yeah.
But he brought you on to talk about security?
I guess, as a matter of fact, personal protection, and as it relates to non-lethal personal protection devices, stun guns, pepper sprays, and all that stuff. And I actually performed a stunt, which we cannot talk about right now.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about the industry and what you're doing to help people.
So I guess my vocation is I am a security awareness trainer, a security awareness expert, and I provide security awareness. And that means everything revolving around cyber, social identity, and personal protection as it relates to violence and theft prevention. I inform, educate, entertain my audiences on all things, you know, what to do, what not to do when it comes to bad guys, predators and thieves, right? What your options are, you know, everything from protecting your person. My philosophy has always been all security is personal. And what that means is all security begins with your person, even on the network level. If you're a chief information security officer for a major corporation, and you are responsible for protecting the actual network of the company, your security still begins personally. It begins with your body. It begins with you protecting yourself from physical predators. And it evolves from there to your identity, to the data in which you are entrusted with. And once people understand personal protection as it relates to violence prevention, you know, like I said, protecting yourself from predators, then all other security begins to fall in place, protecting your identity, protecting your social, protecting your credit cards, and so on.
Huh.
So, yeah.
So 2024, a lot is happening. You know, we've got AI, we've got deep fakes, we've got, you know, fishing expeditions. What what do people need to be thinking about more than anything else? And I'm talking about the individual consumer person.
Yeah. So it really does boil down to the absolute fundamentals, the absolute basics, right? So there are thousands and thousands of scams out there. The thousands of ways in which bad guys have devised methods from the original snake oil salesman to part you with your money, to the AI deepfakes today that look like or sound like it's your daughter who's been kidnapped calling you from some remote place, and she needs you to wire money as quickly as possible or the kidnappers are going to murder her, right? I mean, that is actually happening as we speak. And everything from the snake oil salesman to that in between is an issue. And it will continue to be an issue, because what it really boils down to is, and when I say go back to the basics, the absolute fundamentals, Mark, it's like the problem that we as human beings have when it comes to preventing fraud, when it comes to preventing the bad guy from infiltrating our lives, is that when you and I are born, and I'm getting like real basic with you here, when you and I are born, we fundamentally trust by our nature, meaning that you go throughout life trusting pretty much everyone and everything and every email and every phone call and every text message. You pretty much trust everyone by default. Like, you are born trusting because we are an interdependent species. And as an interdependent species, we require trust by default in order to procreate, in order to function, in order to thrive as a species. We need each other. We depend on each other. And because of that, because of this trust by default, we pretty much go through our life wanting and needing to trust each other. And so when a bad guy understands this fundamentally, and they use that trusting nature against us, the ruse, the scam, it does not have to be all that outlandish to, you know, get us to click that link, to get us to download that file, to get us to provide our credit card number, our social security number, or whatever it is, you know? And it's like, so like we talk about like all these major issues, all these big crimes out there, but it's really the basic stuff that we just need to understand. And once we understand that not only do we trust by nature, not trusting others, now think about this for a second, not trusting others is a learned behavior, which means you learn that not everybody is worthy of your trust, usually at an early age. And when you learn that not everybody is worthy of your trust, you learn through pain. You learn through deceit. It's either physical pain, or somebody betrayed you, or somebody took from you. Like, you learn that Johnny is not to be trusted because he bit me when I was 4 years old. You know, that's how we learn that not everybody is worthy of our trust, through experience, through trauma. And most people don't want to think about that stuff. They don't want to think, A, it can happen to me. Like, and they literally function in denial throughout their entire lives. It can't happen to me. Like, for example, I ask my audiences when I do a live presentation in front of a group of people, I go, like, how many of you have a home security system? And I ask that question, and maybe like 10, 15% raise their hands. And I go, well, why don't you have a home security system? And the response is often, well, I don't want to live like that. I don't want to live in fear. I don't want to have to worry. And my response is always like, WTH, like, why is it that you think that a product, a service, a system that's designed to give you control, it's designed to protect you and your family, is going to make you afraid? Why is that? Well, because I don't want to be paranoid. You know, if I have to think about security and people are out to get me, that I'm going to be paranoid. It's like, no. That's not what security is. Security is about giving you control. But we in our culture, specifically in the US, is that we actually look at security as a form of paranoia, you know, which really is a mental health disorder, you know? And if you look at security as paranoia, you're not going to want to engage in it at all. You're going to go to the complete opposite direction and do nothing about it. Not lock your doors, not have that home security system, not get identity theft protection, not do all the necessary things to be aware all the systems in place to know what those scams are, because you don't want to think it can happen to you to begin with. You don't want to engage in security at all because it's about fear and paranoia. It's like, that is just so dumb. That's not what it is at all. It's about taking responsibility. It's about, like, you put that seatbelt on, not because you're paranoid. You put it on because it's the smart thing to do, you know? And that's how my presentations generally start off. It's kind of like challenging people's beliefs as to what security is and what it isn't. And once you understand what it is and what it isn't, once I challenge your beliefs, and once you go, oh, yeah, I kind of do want security. I kind of do need security. Security actually does mean something and matter to me. I want it for myself and for my family and for my bank account and so on. Then people begin to embrace security and do something about it. And every scam that comes across your desktop or your mobile phone or your laptop or whatever, you begin to recognize risk at a higher level. You begin to see things a little bit clearer and differently in such a way where you become a tougher target.
So it's kind of a refrain from, I'm going to just put my head in the sand and continue to act like I am in preschool, that everybody is one love and I don't have to worry about it because not me, to a higher awareness, a more educated and comfortable existence as opposed to paranoia.
And there's no worry. There's no fear. There's no like overwhelm. You know, and nothing about what I present and the manner in which I present the information revolves around, oh, if you don't do this, you're screwed. Yeah. Like there's none of that. It's all about kind of getting to the root of the issue of denial, really, you know, because that's what most human beings do when it comes to a number of different things in our lives. We function in denial. Denial is actually a good thing that helps us avoid stress and anxiety and worry and all that stuff. Like, if you actually paid attention and fully understood what's going on with climate change, you probably would never leave the house, get in a car, or fly in a plane ever. So it's much easier to function in denial but let's not get into that, because then I'll just start crying.
Denial ain't just a river in Egypt, right?
No, it's a real thing that we go through. And when it comes to security, most people function in a level of denial where we don't really want to think about it. But like you said, it's a reframe. And once I get them to understand that, and by asking them a number of different probing questions, that they begin to answer and understand the ridiculousness of their answers, then they're like, oh, yeah, this is actually a good thing. And I want this. Okay, I am open to hear everything you have to say now. And that's really what happens. And I do that for like an hour and a half keynote, a 3-hour workshop, or a full day, you know, seminar. And like, I have almost 100 Google, I've only started doing this a year ago. I almost have like 100 Google business reviews. And like, we have 5 stars across the board. And you would be amazed at how many people say 6 hours went by too fast. Mm. Imagine. Like, that's how flipping good I am, man.
I believe it. I believe it. So let's switch to business, right? So one of the things I heard recently was, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when the cyber attack is going to hit you, you know, and there's a scare tactic associated with that. But what's the reality to that statement?
Well, the reality of it is, if you haven't been hit by a cyber attack, it's because you don't know it.
Right.
You know, and it's like, that's kind of the reality of things. You know, like, as a small business, you've likely been infiltrated in some way. And what I do is I expose a number of what those ways might be and have you take a look at your network, depending on the size and scope of your organization. What you have to lose would depend on how big of a target you might be or how small of a target you might be. You know, in some organizations, like, for example, a small mom and pop type businesses, you have a front facing website that has the company CEO, the principals, the owners, and so forth. And then on that same website, it might not be too difficult to get a phone number and an email of an assistant. And that assistant becomes the target. You know, and the assistant becomes the target, and the bad guy would pose as, you know, Mark Stiles. And say, hey, assistant, I have like these 5 clients that I love that I want to send them on a Christmas gift, or a Valentine's gift or whatever, and I want to send them $500 Apple gift cards, you know? And so the bad guy communicates posing as Mark Stiles and talks to your assistant as you and gets the assistant to go out and use the company credit card or even her credit card and say, I will reimburse you tonight or tomorrow. No problem. Just make it work. Give me those 5 gift cards. Go to Walmart. Go to Walgreens. You know, take pictures of them and scratch off the codes in the back and, you know, buy yourself one too. Right. And because, you know, she's does what she's told and he or she is a good model employee, they run right out and they buy those 5 gift cards. That's $2,500. Right. And that scam is so unbelievably popular and so unbelievably effective because, like, we as humans, you know, like I said, we trust by default. If the communications are good enough, if everything looks like it's supposed to, if it's convincing enough, if the ruse itself is not all that overwhelming, all the bad guy's going to do is make 100 phone calls like that in a day. And all he's got to do is find one person, just one person that it all lines up properly. And that one person agrees to it. And there you go. That's $2,500. Like, that's a good day's pay. I don't care what industry you're in. I don't care what business you're in. You know, if it takes you 8 hours to do that, $2,500 in 8 hours, like, that's lucrative. And that's considered a breach. Right? And so that's just one of many thousands of different ruses to be aware of. And what most people get wrong is that they're not going to be targeted from something like that, and that every communication that comes in, they just automatically trust it. And then, you know, that's how they get hooked.
The trust, the trust. And what about the penetration where they lock you down? The business gets locked down and it's ransom. Have you experienced
ransomware? Yeah. So just this week or this over the past couple of weeks, United Healthcare, Challenge Healthcare, one of the larger healthcare institutions in the country, handles, like, I don't know, like 15,000 different organizations or whatever. They had ransomware. They paid, Mark, they paid $22 million in ransom to get back access to their data. $22 million. And what was interesting about this particular breach is the software that was used to lock them down and hold their data for ransom was a software that was sold to other hackers. Okay. And the way these hackers work, they actually have like a for-profit business with a hierarchy and the whole thing. The way they work is like, if you make money with our software, then you have to give us a percentage.
Oh my goodness. So it's an organized crime.
It's organized crime. And the guys, the original hackers that used the software of the other guys ran off with the $22 million and didn't pay. So the healthcare insurance, they did not get their access to their data yet because there's no honor among thieves.
And that's the one thing you hear about the ransomware is pay them because there is honor among thieves. And if you pay, then they'll release it. And that's all you got is the trust of the thief.
Yeah. And so something like that can be avoided if you have what we call, you know, like the right systems in place. So one of the things that my team does is we have what's called a virtual chief information security officer on staff. And a VCISO is a virtual chief information security officer. Basically, is two guys in a briefcase and a bunch of laptops. And they utilize what's called penetration testing software, vulnerability scanning software to kind of go in either remotely or on site and scan your network to look for those vulnerabilities. And when they determine what your flaws and vulnerabilities are, then they make recommendations on what you need to do to patch that all up so it doesn't happen in the future. And these vulnerability scans, this penetration testing, these virtual chief information security officers, they work with small mom and pops all the way to, you know, large Fortune 500s and 1000s and so forth. And That's their job, is to think like the bad guy does and to look for those vulnerabilities through the same or similar software that the bad guys use to find those vulnerabilities. And once they find them, they patch them up and they keep you whole. So for a few bucks per month, it could be anywhere for a few hundred to a few thousand, they're monitoring your network in such a way where if you were to go down for any period of time, they have the your VCISO has backup your backup. Like they've already set systems up, put systems in place that you can easily go back to work pretty quickly based on the backup network that they've provided you.
We're hearing stories where they're nailing the backup to the backup also. Is that so? There is still a potential to be backed up?
Oh yeah, of course. So here's the thing about security. There's no such thing as 100% security. There's always going to be vulnerabilities of some kind. You know, security is a journey. It's not necessarily a destination. It's not a place that you ever fully arrive to. Security is 24/7, 365. You know, as they say, security never sleeps, right? It's an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. And so when you hire a company whose job it is to protect your network, you know, that's what they do. That's their job. Are they going to score 100% of the time? No. But you also have cybersecurity insurance to watch your back. Should all else fail, that cybersecurity insurance is there. And as long as you had that vulnerability scan, as long as you hired that private firm to make sure that you are compliant in regards to the cybersecurity insurance, then your claim will be, you know, taken care of. So today, these days, like, I don't care if you're mom and pop or a big major corporation, security is not necessarily something that I would consider a do-it-yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's certain things that you can do yourself and certain things that you should do yourself. And you certainly have to have a certain basic understanding of like password management. You know, like if you're using the same password across multiple accounts, well, you are the biggest part of the problem. You know, if you're using 123456 as a password.
Well, password as a password.
Password is a problem, you know? And
why is that? Because they're able to kind of scan through on a commonly used password system to try to break into your password.
Exactly. That's exactly correct. So there's actual software. It's called credential stuffing software that stuffs known credentials into the login, username and password. So they can get your basic email address as a username. And then as far as passwords are concerned, well, every word in the dictionary, along with there have been billions of stolen records over the past, you know, decade, about 150 billion stolen records. And this credential stuffing software will take all known used passwords, commonly used passwords, existing passwords, and plug them into this credential stuffing software and look for, you know, a match. And that technology, credential stuffing software, is being deployed by criminal hackers globally to get access to your email, to get access to your virtual network, to get access to your banking, and so on. And if you're not using a password manager, which is a software that's designed to manage all the passwords you're supposed to have. Like I probably have, I don't know, 700, 800 different passwords for all the various accounts I'm connected to over the past 20 years. I probably only have maybe 150 active accounts, but all those accounts all have a different password. And I never use the same passcode twice. And my password manager generates those passwords for me. And I wouldn't even think to not have a password manager. A password manager software is something that I've had, like I said, for 20 years. It's probably the best use of my time and money in regards to my information security. It's 20 bucks a year. Why wouldn't you have a password manager? You know, because you don't know about it, because you're worried the password manager is going to get breached. And it's like, well, when people say that to me, like, what about the password manager getting breached? It's like, well, that fatalist attitude is unhelpful. First of all, the low-hanging fruit is not the password manager getting hacked. The low-hanging fruit is the fact that you're using password as a password. And that is a lot of people, you know, along with using the same password across multiple accounts. So I have access to a database, and so do you. But we have, at my website, protectnowllc.com, everybody has access to a database where we have access to 13 billion stolen records. Okay. And you can plug your email address and or your password or passwords into our database and search to find out if your username in the form of an email address and associated passwords for any of your accounts were associated with any known data breaches. And not only can you find out if your data has been compromised, but bad guys can also see how many people are using, out of 13 billion stolen records, are using password as a password. And it turns out to be like 10 million, you know? So like, if I know this and you know this, bad guys obviously know this too, you know?
So what's a good password software management for $20 a year? Like what would you recommend people use?
So starting with Googling, right? The answer is always Google it, right?
Yeah.
If you Google password manager, from there, you'll see a bunch of articles. You'll see a bunch of websites like wired.com and PCMag.com. They've done all the research for us neophytes, and they've determined like all the top 10 password managers that are, you know, robust, that they do what they're supposed to do, that they haven't been hacked, that they work across Microsoft and Windows, and they work on all the various browsers and mobile devices and so forth. And so you do your basic research on PC Magazine, wired.com, just search password manager on Google. And right off the bat, in the first page of search, you'll see those top 10 type articles. Do your research there, learn about them. And then from there, make a decision, download one. If you like it, you should be good. I like RoboForm. I like 1Password. I like Dashlane and so forth.
And do they memorize? So are you letting them auto-populate into your system too? Is that?
How that works. So you do have to train it like most software programs. You train your password manager. So let's just say you're one of those people that's using the same passcode across multiple accounts. So when you download a password manager and install it, the very first day, you're going to have that password manager remember all the various websites that you go to on a daily, weekly, monthly, annual basis. And over time, you're training the password manager to recognize all the websites that you frequent on a regular basis. And once it knows all the websites you go to, as quickly as possible, now go to each of those websites and begin to change the passwords at each website. The password manager will create a long, strong uppercase numbers, characters, and so forth password for you. And you copy paste it into that website, you know, AT&T, Verizon, whatever it might be. And over time, you have it remember each of the new passwords. And over days, weeks, months, year, it now knows, and you, because you've changed all the passwords for all the various websites that you visit, and going forward, all the new websites that you join, you do the same thing. You have it create one for you, and it asks you, do you want to remember the password for Zoom? Yes, I do. And you click that button, and before you know it, you've got a password manager that takes you to all the various websites that you visit on the regular, and you are more secure than probably 90% of the people in the world.
And that's much more secure than letting your computer remember it.
I don't let my computer remember anything like that. I don't let my browser be my password manager. I want to control a third-party password manager that installs on my Windows machine, it installs on my Mac machine, it installs on my iPhone and my iPad and so forth. I can use it across devices, across browsers, right? So it works on, like I said, Chrome, it works on Edge, it works on Safari. So a third-party password manager works across all your various operating systems and devices and hardware and software and so forth. That way, you have a software that works ubiquitously with all of the various hardware and software that you use in your digital life. If you're just having a device to remember stuff, then it's not going to work in your iPhone, or it works in your iPhone, it doesn't work in your Mac, it works in your Mac, it doesn't work in your Windows. And now you're just back to square one and you just, you know, fighting the tide.
Trying to remember where that sheet of paper is with all of your passwords on it.
Yeah. And you know what, Mark, this day and age, like password 101 is like the easiest thing that anybody can do right now to become so much more digitally literate and that much more secure. And if we were to do this one basic thing, that is just understanding the idea of security with this one software, you just breathe so much easier, and it provides you so much more time in your life. And just that one thing, you're upping your security game by tenfold.
How important is the dual authentication, right?
Yeah, that is the
contributors are like, oh, this is such a pain. Oh, no, I don't want to.
I have two-factor authentication for each and every critical account that I possess.
Yeah.
And that includes LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Visa, MasterCard, American Express and PayPal and you name it. Like, I want two-factor authentication for all my critical accounts, because if any of them are compromised, you're locked out. And often, in many cases, you're locked out for good. You know, if you Google, and this is how I what I teach my audiences. If you just go to Google and you search two-factor Gmail, two-factor AOL, two-factor Hotmail, two-factor Yahoo, two-factor PayPal, and so forth, and hit enter, hit go, whatever, you'll find the page at AOL on how to set up two-factor authentication. You'll find the page at Gmail on how to set up two-factor authentication for Gmail and Google and so forth. And it's so easy. And these basic one-on-one things, most people don't do because, you know, they don't think it's going to happen to them. They're afraid. They're overwhelmed. They don't know where to begin.
That's why they don't lock their door.
That's why they don't lock their door. You know, it's like, it's just so not necessary to worry about these things. And look, I don't worry about any of this stuff. Like, one of the things I say to my audience is like, and this is a true thing, like, I'll get up in front of them towards the beginning of the presentation, and I'll say to them, listen, I'm a guy that has 20 plus security cameras, both inside and outside my house in total. Now, if I'm a guy that's got 20 plus security cameras, this is a legit question. What does that say about my outlook? What does that say about my disposition? What does that say about how I process the world? The guy's got 20 plus security cameras. He must be what?
Crazy, paranoid. Oh my
God. Yeah, exactly. Or safe and secure. And it's like, your answer is the answer that I get 9 out of 10 times. And it's like, well, you know, no, like, I don't worry about, I love security cameras. Like, when I travel, I'm on the road, like, I get to see what's going on inside the house. If there's a package missing, I get to look at the camera to find out what's going on. Oh, and it went to my neighbor's house instead of my house and so forth. It's like, I love stuff like that. I can see where the dog is while I'm out. Like, is she getting into something? You know, like, I love stuff like that. Like, technology is a lot of fun. Am I crazy? No. I mean, paranoia is a real mental health disorder. It's a dis-ease of the mind. And security is not that at all. And if we equate security and paranoia, we will do nothing about security, including installing a password manager. I mean, that's what it boils down to. Our resistance to this wonderful form of control, security, is so unnecessary that we don't do anything about it. And once you understand its value in your personal and professional life, you will want to embrace it in ways in which you never even considered.
How did you get into this space?
Man, I was 12 years old in downtown Boston with my little brother. We got on the Orange Line. My dad let us. And you could do that back then, right? And we got mugged by 5 kids in downtown Boston. And I got, you know, I actually shat myself. Like, that was not a good thing. And I go home and my dad sits my brother and I down and makes us watch PBS documentaries on, you know, like the wild world of animals, Mutual of Omaha's Wild World of Animals, it was. And he explained to us, see that lion? That lion's a predator. And see those gazelles? That's you and your brother. That you're the prey. Those boys are predators and you're the prey. Those don't let that happen to you again. And he taught us, you know, self-defense. And then from that point on, I understood that predators and prey. And about a year later, I was 13 years old and I was I went to summer camp, you know, like a lot of kids went to summer camp. And I met a girl at summer camp and she liked me and I liked her, you know, like you had the whole butterflies thing and everything. Mm. And we sat on the bus together after camp, at the end of camp. And one day I got off on her bus stop and we went to her house and we sat in her front stands. And I'm like 13 and I think she's like 12, 13. And she says to me, and I'll never forget it, she says to me, "I think you should know something." I was like, "What?" And her face was like all flushed. And I was like, "What?" And she's like, "My mother's boyfriend raped me." And I was like, "Oh, that's awful." Right. And I could see in her face, like how upset she was. And not too long after that, I go home and I says to my father, "Dad, what is rape?" Because I had no idea what she was talking about. I really, truly had no idea what she was talking about. I was 13. Mark, this was 42 years ago. We didn't know what sex was when we were 13. We didn't have social media and MTV and everything else. Like, we didn't know, you know, like we were relatively innocent back then. Mm-hmm. My dad taught me about the birds and the bees and forcible rape in the exact same conversation. From that point on, I just made it my mission to inform and educate all those around me about personal protection, especially young girls. And so I started taking self-defense and I started to teach self-defense and I started to buy pepper sprays and stun guns and give them away to all the young women in my life. That turned into a business, a small business selling non-lethal personal protection products in my teens and early 20s. That turned into seminars on personal protection. And one of my first clients was a small local board of realtors. Because real estate agents are murdered in this country, well, all over the world, actually. And I started to teach realtors personal protection, which I still do today. And that evolved from personal protection as it relates to violence and theft prevention in the physical world to violence and theft prevention online. Because as my business was growing in the mid-90s, I was hacked in the mid-90s. Thousands and thousands of dollars in credit card fraud. And when that happened, I was like, WTH, like, how did they just steal thousands of dollars from me? Like, I was devastated because back then, thousands of dollars, like $3,000-$4,000 was a huge deal. It was a lot of money. And as upset as I was enamored. I wanted to know how they did it. Like, how do you do that? I wanted to reverse engineer their whole process. Because I realized, like, if you could do that virtually the way that they did, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. Like, I just saw it, you know? And so my focus evolved. It didn't change. It evolved. And I wanted to understand more. And so I started to study computer hacking and identity theft. And by the late 90s, I started to see it growing pretty dramatically. By 2001, 2002, I was like, this is going to be one of the biggest things ever. And what happened was when 9/11 hit, okay, that's when I went full time with what I'm doing today. And I realized back then that personal protection as it relates to violence prevention is a void that has not been filled in such a way that needs to be, and that criminal hacking and identity theft is just going to keep getting worse. It's never going to get any better. And that people are just, you know, head in the sand, like you said, and I made a go of it. But right after 9/11, it was actually January of 2022. I'm sorry, 2002.
Thank you. Long time ago now.
Yeah. It was January of 2002 that I made it a full go. And my wife at the time, my wife today, my fiance at the time, said, "You want to give this a full-time go? Go for it. I will support you." And I did not need a penny of her support because right out of the gate, I just got on the phone. I started banging the phone, calling real estate brokers and boards of realtors and state associations. And they were like, "Yeah, we need this." And that has not changed. That has not stopped. And they are the real estate industry is one of my biggest clients. And you know, but I speak to all industries, because all industries are, look at everybody. I don't care what walk of life you are. I don't care what industry you are. I don't care what your role and responsibilities in your job. Everybody thinks security is about paranoia, and they don't want to think it can happen to them, and they don't want to do anything about it, and they'd rather watch Dancing with the Stars. Everybody. We are just a simple, simple creature, and we don't want to think about these things. And I get it. I understand. You know?
I love it. So you're self-taught. You're an entrepreneur. You saw the opportunity. You needed there was an issue that needed to be solved, and you figured out how to do it, and you've created a business around that.
I have managed to put two kids through private school since they were 3.5 years old, $5,000 to $7,000 a year in frigging dance, man. My wife is a dance mom. Dance is expensive. It's awesome. I cry every year at the recital, but still, I mean, I could have bought, I don't know how many Harleys and how many vets, and I don't know. I'm like, and then so private school, dance, and a mortgage, you know, and whatever else. You know, my boat is a 1999, Mark. It's a 1999, my boat. So I don't have a new boat, no jet skis. My bike, my motorcycle is a 1987. But I love my bike. I love my boat. I got my stuff, you know. So we live humbly, but I've managed to keep it all going, you know.
And you made a successful business of helping people, which I think is really cool. Speaking of that, so you mentioned testimonials and reviews. Somebody works with you, you know, what does that look like? Where they want to sit down and they want to get on the Google machine and they want to say wonderful things about you and your team. What does that sound like?
Like the testimonial itself? Well, you know, because I'm constantly copying and pasting, you know, my testimonials and sending them off to my clients.
Cool.
And one second. So that being said, right? Hold on, right here. I got a document in front of you. This is just from like the past couple of days, right? I love my clients. Fantastic and terrifying presentation, right? This is from yesterday. Excellent presenter, relevant and up-to-date information given. Highly recommend to take the seminar. He gave great advice and I'm already taking him up on it. You know, like excellent presentation. It's rare in a presentation you actually get tools and or guidance on where to go to get the tools you need to help fight fraud. It did this and more. It's like, I love my people and they love me. And it's like, we do this together. Like I want my people to be better. And I tell them when it's all said and done, I'm here for you forever. Like I will take your phone call, your email, your text message. If you need to meet with me, like I am here for you in perpetuity. Like we are in this together. You know, like I truly want my people to be better. I want to be more prepared. Like it matters to me. It means something to me. It means something to them. And I communicate that to them over the course of an hour, 2 hours, 6 hours, whatever. Because like, you know, like I don't want anything to happen to anybody. I got girls, man. I got two daughters, you know, like my daughter's like, I have been like educating and informing them since day one. You know, one of the reasons why I got into personal protection to teach young girls self-defense is because back when I started to investigate it, like some of the advice that they would give young women back then, as far as sexual assault goes, Mark, is I would actually read and hear people say, just let it happen so it doesn't get any worse. No. People used to say that. And I was floored by that information. Like I was, well, what? Why would you let it happen? Like, why wouldn't you fight? Like, why wouldn't you do what's necessary to get away from that situation? And since that time, studies have proven over and over and over again that 9 out of 10 men and women who fight back, offer resistance in an attack situation, get away. Huh. And don't you know, Mark, till this very day, I know for a fact, and I have actual video of a politician in like Minnesota, like just 1 or 2 years ago, who actually said on camera, I tell my daughters, they literally said on camera, I tell my daughters, if you're going to be sexually assaulted. Just sit back and enjoy it.
No.
I have it on video.
Oh my
He was a GOP in like Minnesota or Michigan or something. I was like, that people are still telling their others this. Like, it's a real thing. Like, people are dumb like that, Mark. Mm. And so what my daughter is like, they understand that if something was to happen, if anything, you let them kiss you and you bite down on their lips until your teeth meet, is what I tell them. You know, and that's what I tell my audience is like, I don't want anything to happen. You know, if it was to happen to you, like, here are your options. You know, hey, Mark, don't get me started.
So how does someone reach out to you and get you on the speaker circuit? And is it Protect Now LLC? Is that the best way?
Yeah. Yeah. ProtectNowLLC.com, or just Google Robert Siciliano. I mean, if you could spell it. Right. Siciliano. I pretty much dominate the first, you know, few pages of search. I've been doing this now for, you know, 30 years. So, but protectnowllc.com or just Google Robert Siciliano and you cannot miss me.
You have a lot of content out there, really helpful content. You also have a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called The Security Guy and CIA Spy. So my cohort, Peter Warmka, he's a retired CIA guy, you know, Langley, the whole thing. Real good-natured guy. And we try to get together at least once or twice a month.
I love it. And you can find it on all places where you find podcasts, Security Guy.
Oh, yeah, Spotify, all over the place. Apple, yeah, we're out there.
Security Guy and CIA Spy. Go find it, folks. Put a subscribe, smash the subscribe button and check it out. I'm not going to let you go without the question that I ask everybody, though. Rob, we're getting everybody together, all the guests. It's created a somewhat of a network underneath the catalog of podcasts that I've had here. We're sharing businesses and working and networking with each other. We're going to all come together and at the core of it is going to be karaoke. So Rob Siciliano, you're up next. What are you singing, my man?
Well, number one, I cannot sing. That's number one. Number two, if I had the ability, it would be like, I don't know, communication breakdown from Led Zeppelin, brother.
Wow.
I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan.
Let the lead out. I love it. Some say the greatest rock and roll band of all time.
They are the greatest rock and roll band of all time.
I have a friend who would agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, my man. I appreciate you sharing your time. Again, folks, if you're jogging, if you're running and you're walking the dog, if you're doing dishes, you're working out on the treadmill, protectnowllc.com. That's easily found. Thomas will put it in the show notes so you can fear not. You can go home, you can press through, and you can see a lot of content with Robert Siciliano. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, my brother.
Folks, this has been another exciting episode of Elements of Styles. If you thought of somebody while we were talking, share this with them. You know what? Share it with everyone. Everyone needs to understand this information. Thank you and have a great week, folks.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice for a new episode each week and share this with everyone and anyone. If you have any questions or comments or have an idea for another guest, feel free to shoot me an email at mstiles@styles-law.com. That's M-S-T-I-L-E-S @styles-law.com. And if you are a real estate professional, be sure to check us out on our private exclusive Facebook page, The Real Estate School at 892, for content and Massachusetts continuing education opportunities. Be well, folks.
This episode is brought to you in part by Secura Title. Secura Title is a fractional paralegal service assisting with all things real estate in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. SecuraTitle.com, where security and title come together. SecuriTitle.com. Secura Title.
This podcast is being provided for informational purposes only. The podcast is not a comprehensive overview of the subject and is not intended to provide legal or financial advice or an endorsement of any product or business. The views expressed by podcast guests are their own, and their appearance on the podcast does not imply any endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Please seek legal, financial, or tax advice before taking any action on the matters or products discussed herein.